Our libraries were the worst funded in the state. We were in survival mode, and we had to conserve our resources. For instance, our supply closet was under lock and key, and we only doled out pencils one or two at a time. We even rationed our scotch tape by the inch. In 2005, we became a district, and we spun off from Adams County government. We changed our name from Adams County Library System to Rangeview Library District. We were going for our third attempt at a mill levy, our third attempt. And the board made a decision that if we didn't get the funding this time, we were going to have to close one of our neighborhood libraries. We changed our campaign approach from support our libraries to save our libraries. Well, third time's a charm for us, and the voters voted yes for our mill levy increase. Now that we have the funding, the board needed to make some strategic and thoughtful decisions on how they were going to spend it. They had a vision for the new libraries that were user-friendly, similar to bookstores, and they needed a new innovative leader to make that happen. We did a national library search for our library director, and the board realized they needed a non-traditional librarian. Well, they got more than that. They got a revolutionary.
The definition of revolution, according to Wikipedia, is a turnaround, a fundamental change of power or organizational shift over a short period of time. In any organization's lifespan, you really only get a chance once, I think, to do the kinds of things that we're having to do at Rangeview. We basically have about 10 years of infrastructure work, and we're doing all of that, meaning IT, collections, staff, training, everything, in about a two-year period of time. We also have a capital project going. We're building four new libraries and renovating three, and that's happening in 3 years. When we won the mill levy in 2006, it seemed like winning the lottery. But going from $4 million operating funds for 315,000 population to $12 million doesn't really go as far as it needs to. We knew we were only going to have one chance, and we wanted to do it right. We could look at old models, but we decided that we were going to shoot for the moon. When I interviewed for library director with the board, one of the things that I said in closing was, one of the roles of a leader is to JFK it. JFK it, you say? What does that mean? JFK means it's the role of a leader to set the standards high, to set the bar high, to shoot for the moon. I guess the board wanted to shoot for the moon because they hired me. And some days I think they probably feel like Pam is on the moon. A team of administrators, collaborators, architects, project managers, leadership team worked collaboratively together to decide exactly what library we wanted to become. I bet everyone in this room has heard people say, I've got a computer on my desk, and I've got Google. Why do I need the library? Sometimes the response to that question from libraries is, we've got databases. I think we have to have a better answer. And so we set out to figure out what that answer might be. In Adams County, 63% of our population is under 45 years of age. Only 10% of those users had library cards 2 years ago. We had a lot of work cut out for us, and so we knew that we had one time to get them in the door and we'd better do something spectacular. Again, we looked at the old traditional models, and we think that a library has to be much more than a place where you come in and check out books, or even much more than a place you come in and use a computer. We've got to add value. So one of the things we did is we created the experience model. We talked about product model, We talked about relationship model, and we invented the experience model because people love to interact with information. And so that's really where we're focusing our energies, is that interaction. Some of you all might have read this month's issue of Fast Company. The cover article is A is for Apps. They're talking about how children are learning in an interactive way, and three-year-olds are learning their alphabet with their iPhone. With the world of information changing so rapidly, we've got to catch up. Our revolution was to create a structure, a common language, and a new philosophy and culture to support this new library.
So Picasso said, anything you can imagine is real. And then he painted those things. Well, we have really big imaginations and really big dreams, and then it was time to get down to work and start painting. So we looked at our strategic plan, and out of that we created our annual operating plan, and we looked at that and we saw how much work we had to do in our very first year together. So we divided everything into task groups. Different projects would be done. And because we wanted a lot more people at the table, we invited everyone in our district to volunteer for one of 10 or 11 task groups. So the task groups would have an admin team member, they would have a branch manager or department head, but they would also have librarians, shelvers, support staff, library assistants. Anybody who wanted to join and work really hard was most welcome. So we got down to it. We got a lot of work done. But what also happened was, instead of change coming down from the top to people, everyone was helping create the change. And then people would go back to their branches or their departments. And so the folks back at the branch, they would hear about the changes not from the director or the board. They'd hear about the changes from their coworkers and colleagues who were actually creating the change. So because of this, not only did we get an awful lot of work done, we created an incredible esprit de corps that we had never had before.
For instance, we formed a merchandising task force to research all the best practices for merchandising our books in our new libraries, and we hit the ground running. We published our first official AnyThink guide to merchandising in 5 weeks' time. That kind of shows you like how pumped we were to get started. And a staff person actually who was involved with the project even minted a new word to kind of describe the type of display fluffing now that we were recommending all librarians to do on their hourly walkthroughs on the floor to fluff our displays, called Fluffenroven, or Fluffenroven, I suppose. I think there's even an umlaut in there someplace.
Don't forget about the yellow geckos. Another task team that we created was the Staff Appreciation and Training Task Team. And when you look at that acronym, it was the SAT team. So decision number one for us was to change our name, but something that fit our style. We were a fun, upbeat, pretty spunky group, so we changed our name to the Yellow Geckos. We had always had a family atmosphere at the district, and we wanted to build on that. The purpose of the Yellow Geckos was to unite staff through creating fun events outside of work. We believe that this builds teamwork and adds to a culture and workplace of fun. Some of the events we came up with were we did a wellness program, and we also had hikes on some of the beautiful trails of Colorado. We had a trivia night. And isn't it amazing how many interesting facts librarians have in their brains for trivia night? And my favorite is our annual bowling night. The first year, we had about 7 teams participate in this. And in the past October, we had 15 teams participate. People dress up in costume. It's a competitive event and silly, and they make up fabulous names for themselves, like Spare Me, Bowling Stones, Lucky Strikes, and my favorite, Oops, I Split My Pants. Apart from the Yellow Geckos, we have a staff appreciation breakfast that we do each year. This year, we wanted to do something a little different, and we created what we call an experience raffle. The raffle was for staff. Just like we asked them to create experiences for our customers, we wanted to create some experiences for staff. But before they could put their name into the raffle, they had to take an oath to the experience. And the oath basically said, number one, if I get the raffle, I will go on the experience that I've won. Number two, I'll borrow the flip camera from the district and I'll film some of my experience. We had experiences like cooking class, ballet tickets, the museum pass, and a bluegrass festival. It was things that maybe people wouldn't necessarily choose for themselves, and so it was a lot of fun. Yellow Gecko's task force has an inspiring way and a new approach to staff appreciation, and we have a lot of fun.
The new libraries that we were creating and the untraditional style of service that we were creating for them was becoming very powerful and very liberating. But we had a very uninspired logo at the time. There you see it. And we needed a new flag. We needed a new symbol to march behind. And so we put the word out far and wide for a creative team that could help us develop our new brand. And we had the opportunity to meet a team, a very highly creative team by the name of Ricochet Ideas. They got us immediately, even when we couldn't really fully understand what it was that we wanted to do with the brand. We were just beginning to formulate it in our minds, and after 2 minutes, we realized that this group of people understood what we were looking for and immediately latched on to the energy that we were creating and said, we can help you figure out where to go with this. It was a perfect match, really, when you think about it, because they were a very select group of creative people who were looking for some really unique social and creative challenges. And we were a challenger brand, so to speak. And so we were like the perfect client for them. The process that they set up to help us define the new brand actually created like a new vocabulary for us that we all began using immediately, and it brought us, we used it all in the same way, and so it brought everybody on the same page when we all began thinking about what this new brand would be, and we could actually even talk about it now.
I'm going to disrupt for just a second here and give the people in the back of the room a break. If you're standing or sitting on the floor or can't see, there's an entire row right here. So you have 30 seconds to get up off your back end and fill it, or you're stuck where you're there. And I have 5 pages of notes. Yeah, come on, get off the floor and come on back. Unless you're, if you're sending text messages, you can stay where you are, I guess. That's okay. Luckily, everybody talked a lot faster than they did in practice, so we have plenty of time. Okay, so Steve was talking about language, and there's three things that we identified, and I'm going to share a couple of fast tips for marketing with you guys, because we're an advertising and marketing agency. That's what we do. And when we walked into the room with these guys and heard what they were saying about what to deliver with, how to take a library from being just a library, from being a support organization, to becoming a competitive brand. And we were stunned by that, because we work with a lot of clients and a lot of businesses who are supposed to be aggressive and who are supposed to understand competition and who are supposed to ruthlessly do anything possible to get ahead and make a buck. And here we walked into a library and heard some of the most aggressive thinking about how to create a brand. And so we fell in love right away and thought, okay, here's a challenge. This is an opportunity for a marketing and advertising team to do its very best work. So we started talking about this language. And one of the first things we talked about were what can create this cultural shift, not just externally, not just to patrons or customers, but how do we do it internally first? How do we develop this esprit de corps that these guys have been talking about? How do we create this sort of magic that occurs within a group, that motivates a group, that gets everybody rowing in the same direction, right? Everybody is looking for that at every company. So the first thing we set out was to talk about rituals and to work on rituals. We needed to develop those, and Yellow Geckos is a perfect example. We talked about traditions How do we celebrate those rituals? And the last thing was common language. So the first thing I'm going to talk to you about real quick in our Marketing 101 here is the difference between information and persuasion. And I think that a lot of libraries, some are doing a great job of this, but others are lagging behind in that, and a lot of businesses lag behind in this too, so I don't mean to damn libraries in any way, but we're talking about change here. But it seems to me that libraries tend to see themselves a bit passively. They believe that they support their communities, which is great. They wait for their customers and try to serve them, which is great. They don't view themselves as having competition because, right, everything's free. So the problem becomes there's this sort of let's sit on our heels, do we really need to market mentality? And I think that that's something that has to change. So we change that by saying, let's stop talking about information, right? Let's what's something that a library might put out? They might put out a message that says something like, hey, we have a new book club, or there's a new author visiting, right? Or there's a new schedule for story time everybody needs to know about. And these things are important, but they're just information. What we need to make the shift into was persuasion. We need to convince people that we have the power to change their lives. So we started asking the staff to stop thinking in terms of publishing information and start thinking in terms of what's the emotional benefit that's happening here? What can we persuade people? What do we offer people that could truly be life-changing? And at first the staff, I think, sat back and said, well, can we do that? But I think with a little bit of practice and a little bit of work, and we're going to talk about how they got there, they started realizing that this organization was completely primed and ready and waiting to change the lives of its customers and change the lives of the organization itself. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about, information versus persuasion, because I'm guessing everyone's confused right now. Hands up for who's got it. Right? So I can't stop yet. All right, page two. Right? Let's think about it in terms of I'm 44 years old. I'm middle-aged. I'm supposed to be having my midlife crisis. So what am I supposed to do as a man? Right, I got to buy a Porsche. I got to have that convertible. Right? And why do I want that convertible? Is it because it has a retractable rear folding roof that folds down? That's a feature. Or is the benefit that my hair is going to look thicker? Right? I'm younger. Maybe it says I'm successful, right? Porsche is a badge. Any convertible is a badge, right? I want to look attractive. I don't feel like I did 10 years ago. These are silly, but don't say that to Porsche drivers, but these are deep-rooted emotional benefits, right? Much more important than the mechanical nature of a roof that folds down. So if we're talking about libraries or our library in terms of we have books or, gee, we have now more movies than ever or we have story time, aren't we talking about the features? They're all great. They're all important. We put a ton of resource and money into them. But they're not really the top-level thinking we're looking for. We have to find something that connects with people on a deeper level. Page two. I'm going to give you a quick story about motorcycles. And these guys were telling me, do you have any stories that maybe we'll work with women better? Because we're going to have a high percentage of women in the room. So sorry. But bear with me. I just heard this story the other day. I was at a hockey tournament, and there was a guy in the room who was a huge motorcycle enthusiast, and he was taking a friend to buy his very first motorcycle. So they went to a company that was called Victory. Have you guys seen any of the commercials for Victory motorcycles? Okay, so I'm not a motorcycle guy, but they look pretty cool. So apparently these guys went into this dealership, this new brand, right? And they had a fantastic experience. They looked at all the chrome packages, and they looked at, like, the Easy Ride suspension, and they talked about custom paint, and I think they had a learn-to-ride program for the new guy so he wouldn't fall down the minute he drove it off the lot. They had financing options. It was an absolutely fantastic experience. And the guy who rides motorcycles all the time was thinking, all right, this is cool. I bet this guy's going to want one of these. But he told me on the way off the lot, he was like, how'd it go to this new guy who was so enthusiastic about buying his first motorcycle? And the guy said, well, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff, but it's really not a Harley, is it? That's the power of a brand, right? It isn't about the chrome. It isn't about any of those things. It's about something deeper. That guy didn't go to that Victory dealership to buy a motorcycle. He went to buy Rebellion, and he didn't find it at Victory. He knew it existed at Harley. So that is the power of a brand. We talk about the three things a brand really has are a personality, a voice, a reason for being, and the key thing is a promise that it makes to a customer. And so I think that's something that you should ask yourselves. If you boil it down, do you have a personality? Do you have a voice? And what every day when you put on your name tag and go to your position, are you making a promise to the consumer that you can deliver on? Okay, so that's the first set of words. There's 21 more. No, the second set of words are about convention and disruption. And conventions are fairly easy to understand. I mean, these things that we seem to accept, that we don't know why they are. We just sort of inherit them that way, and it's not our job to change it, right? It's not my job's worth to do that. So I'd like to ask you, if you don't mind, anybody have any conventions that exist in your library? And these are things that, for some reason, they just are. You don't have to explain why. In fact, we don't expect you to know why. But somebody out there, be brave and stand up or raise your hand and give me a convention that exists in your library. Unless your boss is here. No, especially if your boss is here. Okay.
In the back, John.
There, you. The Dewey system, yeah, well, some people would like to differ from what I'm reading online, but we tend to think that's definitely a convention. Over there. Has to be quiet. Shh, which I know librarians have been working really hard to change some of these stereotypes, but we need to keep working. Way in the back. Fines are conventions. Someone else, just shout one out, somebody. Okay, that was a bad idea. Did somebody say really bad coffee? That's all I heard. I don't know. Okay, one more maybe.
Reference desk.
A big old reference desk, right? What do you call it? Fort Cirque, right? You guys can hide behind that. Put all your junk back there. So, yes. Big stacks, too. We saw, if you guys were here, we saw some of the pictures there. It's like all these conventions of libraries that are open to change. And when you look at competitive organizations, right, even fast food, look how much that's changed since we were all kids, right? Fast food is now quick serve. It's not fast food. Fast food's bad for you. Now it's quick serve fried chicken. But it looks nicer, right? Everything has a little more home attitude. There's some wood paneling somewhere. So they're recognizing they have to change. So what we like to do is look at conventions because it's an easy way to brainstorm. It's hard to say, how are we going to come this new organization? But if you can look at a convention and say, you know what, let's pick on that. We don't have to figure out who we want to be, but we can sure get rid of that. It's a nice way to start warming people up to bigger change and to start looking for things we call disruptions, right? So convention, disruption. What a disruption is, and I'm going to read you a definition from a guy who's a lot smarter than me named Jean-Marie Drew, who's the chair of a company called TBWA, which is one of the most effective marketing organizations in the world. I guarantee everyone in this room has seen some communication from this organization. But basically, the way he defines it is disruption is a way of unearthing new opportunities. It means being nonconformist, unorthodox, and rebellious. It means always trying to change the rules. And here's, I think, the most important part. It means believing that a company can transform its future through the sheer power of an idea. And I think if you think about some of the brands outside of libraries, forget libraries for a minute, if you think about the Nikes of the world or even the Porsches of the world, the brands that clearly communicate, stand for something, and have a personality, that's what's happening. They have an idea that drives their vision. And I think the best example of that, and I'm biased, but is probably Apple. Whether you're a fan or not, you know where that company is going, and they're consistent in that messaging, and you know so much just from their logo. So our disruption, right, was to stop behaving passively, to start thinking competitively, and to earn customer preference. We weren't going to sit on our heels as a municipal organization and say, please come to the library so we can demonstrate how badly we want to help you. We had to find a way to reach out. Because our customers, after all, are where? Where are today's library customers when they're not in the library? Somebody. They're online. That's easy, huh? But aren't the entrepreneurs that used to go to libraries maybe to meet and talk about forming a business, where are they now? They're at Starbucks, right? They drove right by the library to go to Starbucks. And where are moms today? Some moms go to story time, right? That's always big. But moms, I see them. The stroller crowd is parked down at Barnes & Noble doing in the children's section down there, right? So Barnes & Noble is where our customers are. Where else? Netflix. That's where some of our customers are, right? Because we put all this effort into having movies. But they go to Netflix. So we have to change. Why do they need us? We need a disruption. The last set of rules I'm going to go through, I lied, the second to last, is evolution and revolution. Because it's all fun to talk about disruption, right? But you guys are running organizations. You can't build an airplane in the sky. That's a dangerous thing to do. So how do you go through this process of transformation? How did we go through this process? And again, this is something that we shared with the staff, these words. So we all started looking around and going, ooh, convention, disrupt quickly. You know, right? And then Pam got to deal with that. So we needed to temper that a little bit. And so we talked about evolution and revolution. And here's the difference. Evolutionary ideas are the small steps, but the key here is we're not looking for small steps. Evolutionary ideas are the small steps that have the potential of becoming revolutionary huge steps. So you have to be very careful as you receive all this new feedback from people who cannot wait to be, because they've been given the chance to go to the moon, right? And we all want to go there. But you have to filter them very carefully and decide, okay, this might be a great idea, but does it have a future? Can we build on it? If it's a small step that we put a lot of heart into but not a lot of budget into, can we track it and roll it out and make it bigger, right? So that's the key thing about evolutions, and that's where you start. Conventions, evolutions that lead to revolutions. And if that's a successful process, you'll have to let us know at the end of this presentation because that's what we're walking through here. The last bit of language was that we needed a flag, as Steve said, for our staff to march behind. We needed to give them a sense of purpose and deliver on that brand promise. Again, we need to work internally and then blow it out externally to everybody else. So I'm going to read you something we developed called a brand manifesto. And this was our first attempt at writing. I mean, we had a lot of attempts at getting people together, getting their feedback, motivating them. But this was our first attempt to build language that discussed who we were, who we wanted to be, and how we're going to roll things out. And I know you're all highly educated, so I'll read to you anyway. You're not just an employee, volunteer, or board member. You do not merely catalog books, organize periodicals, and manage resources. You are the gateway into the mind of the idea people who come to our facilities to find a fuel or spark. Part wizard, part genius, and part explorer, it's your calling to trespass into the unknown and come back with a concrete piece someone can hold on to, turn over, and use to fuel their mind and soul. And that's... Okay, we're done here. What that also gave us was a really handy internal lens, and we talk about this. The staff has actually turned it into, instead of internal lens, it's an anything goggle that they put on to approach things. And by having that manifesto in place, it's allowed our team to look at things through the constant lens of, is it wizard, is it genius, is it explorer, does it live up to those expectations? And it makes the process of the smallest decisions a lot more possible because we know where we're coming from. It stops becoming subjective decision making, and it starts becoming something that says, are we living up to our own dream?
Well, remember those task groups I talked about? You know, you get people started, it's really hard to get them to stop, and we think that's a good thing. So we're going through this incredible cultural shift in our organization, trying to make everything completely customer-centric. It means we started looking at anything that could be a barrier to customer service. If it was a process or a procedure or a policy, we looked at it and said, okay, how does this serve our customers? Or does it even serve our customers? And we found that often it didn't. So, talk about convention and disruption and evolution. One of our youth service guys, and I think Colleen's here today, it's April 2 years ago, and she says, hey, what if next year we talked about maybe when the kids come in for summer reading program, if they had fines, what if we gave them a fresh start? And we said, well, that's a really great idea. Why would we wait? Let's do that for this summer reading program. And then 3 days later, we said, well, you know, why would it just be the kids? Let's do the teens and the adults, too. Anybody who comes in to join the summer program this year, fresh start. Well, that snowballed. And one of the task groups, customer service, 6 months later rolled out on Valentine's Day, fine-free range view. We dropped fines completely. And if you have questions, I will answer them later, honest. Another major convention that we disrupted was using a number-based classification system in our nonfiction area. Instead, we went to real words that real people use. We call it WordThink. It means that we use book industry terms like cooking, traveling, law, parenting, real words, to draw people in and help them browse our collections. Better yet, we actually put them in neighborhoods so that if you came in and started looking for do-it-yourself, close by you would find not only do-it-yourself, but gardening, landscaping, architecture, crafts, almost like impulse buying at the store. People could find things that they didn't even know they were interested in. And one of the results of that was it almost doubled the circulation of our nonfiction collection within 3 months. So we think something's working. In fact, I want to give a shameless plug right here. I have to. On Saturday, Thank you. No, we didn't plan that. Cracking the Code will be held Saturday mid-morning, and you can learn about how we moved away from Dewey into a WordThink system. So I hope some of you will show up there. Somebody else mentioned a convention of the reference desk. Okay, everybody who's got glasses, do it. We did away with reference desks. We got rid of Fort Cirque. We're putting service points so that, yes, we can work with our customers, but our staff continually rove throughout the collection. So we greet people, we say, let me know if there's anything I can help you with, and of course the answer is, oh no, I'm fine, thank you. And then it never fails. 20 seconds later, I'm moving down the aisle just to kind of shelve one book. And, you know, the 16-year-old boy says, oh, excuse me, actually, could you help me find something on tattoos? And I'm pretty sure that our staff are having a lot more conversations and a lot more connections with people than we ever would have if we had stayed behind those desks. Okay. The last one that I'm going to talk about is pretty big stuff. We asked John to come in and work with our staff to help disrupt our programming. Instead of programs where we just present something, we wanted to create experiences for our customers. So you could have a wonderful program, not much interaction or anything, but somebody comes in from Active Minds and talks about the history of chocolate. That's got to be interesting, right? Everybody is interested in chocolate. But we wanted something interactive. So we might have a master chocolatier come in, talk about how she got interested in becoming a chocolatier, and then hands-on, have people make truffles and have them double dip the truffles, because in Colorado the air is very dry and you don't want to lose the truffle to its arid climate. So you would learn all of that, and when you walked out, the customer then has the expertise himself or herself. Didn't just sit back and listen to someone. So it was all about putting ideas at the center, having those community connections, maybe using social networking, starting a blog or a wiki, but basically going out and doing something with what you've learned in the program. So our guides, our librarians, were back to identifying conventions. And we came up with, what are the conventional programs that we always have? Somebody just yell one out. Story time. What else? Book clubs. What else? Author talks. Or the big one, summer reading program. They decided to just go ahead and start big and go with disrupting the summer reading program. So, beginning this year, we have My Summer. Read, think, do. My Summer does not require reading a certain number of books or pages. It doesn't require filling out a log. And you don't come into the library and get a little prize from our staff. We wanted it to be much more meaningful for that, than that. We really wanted to evolve it from the point of summer reading, which is we want kids to read so they keep up their reading skills over the summer, right? We wanted to evolve it into they actually had an experience. So some of our programs are pretty outrageous. See, John, you were smart. You didn't staple yours together. All Are you like waiting for it now? Okay. So, yes, our customers are encouraged to read the book or see a movie or listen to music. But then the idea is to mull that over, think about what's happened, and then best of all, to go out into the world with that knowledge and do something with it. So the idea is that by providing something that's hands-on and interactive, we hope that people of all ages, we're talking babies to 80s, that they're going to experience something really new this summer. There'll be an extraordinary spark, and they'll stretch and then continue on their own with explorations. So we have criteria not only for our summer programs, but we've decided to apply them as we go forward with all of our programming. And these are some of the new criteria, because we're disrupting this old convention. So our programs, we ask, is it hands-on and customer-focused? Does it transfer expertise to the participant? Does it have built-in interest, or is it just borrowed? Do you bring in the famous author, because that's a famous person? Or do you bring in a graphic artist who actually will teach the teenagers how to draw manga and create their own graphic novels? Is it daring? Can it start as an evolution and grow to a revolution? Our programs this summer include using Legos to build a jousting track and then having a jousting tournament. For adults and teens, creating your own spa kit. Who couldn't use a little relaxation? Or if you've got kids, having the kids come to the library and do a road trip kit to keep them busy, a survival kit. And my personal favorite, my dirty little secret, Project Runway 2050. One day you're in, the next you're out. So all of these things, we continue to assess and finesse and tweak them. As we like to say, we make it up in the morning, we roll it out in the afternoon, and then the next day we tweak the heck out of it to make it work as best we can. Because everything that we're doing, we're trying to make better, all as it relates to a customer's experience.
As the customer experience became our focus, we knew we needed to update our job descriptions to reflect this. Staff were already part wizard, part genius, part explorers, but our job descriptions hadn't been updated in years. We had a lot of blur to our jobs in the past, and we had a lot of inconsistencies between the branches. A job at one branch may have a set of responsibilities. That same job at another branch may have a different set of responsibilities. For example, in our past, library assistants, some of them did programming, some of them didn't. We wanted to work on our frontline staff's job descriptions first because we knew that had the biggest impact to our customers. We knew we needed to streamline those responsibilities to meet our model that we were working from. But we also knew we were going through tremendous growth over the next few years, and we needed to focus our resources wisely. We looked at all the tasks across the board that were done at the branch, and we ultimately divided them into three different roles: the wrangler, the concierge, and the guide. The wrangler are our material movers. They do daily delivery in the morning, they shelve, they are out there fluffing the displays. They are the material handlers of our district. The concierge, they are the essence of our customer experience. They are the ones warmly welcoming you into our libraries. They're out there roving, they're helping people find what they need. And our guides are our programmers and trainers. These are the reference go-to people, but they're also the ones that create these fabulous programs for us. Now that we had these three brilliant new positions, we needed to come up with a way to get our current staff from their position into these new positions. So again, we disrupted convention by asking all of our branch staff to reapply for these positions. We promised two things, though. We promised, number one, no one was going to lose their job. Number two, no one was going to lose their pay, no matter what job they chose. We asked them what they were interested in, what their top choices were for jobs. We asked them what location they preferred, and we asked them why. What we found is the staff was very thoughtful on what job they thought they could be successful in. And we had all these puzzle pieces, and we were hoping they would all fall together. Amazingly, we had 100% of our staff get their first or second choice of position. We had some promotions that came out of it, and we had some people that chose a different job classification because that's the job they wanted. We had all these wonderful roles now. Everybody was in their new role, and now we had the big job of how to train them.
Oh, that was the summer training, as we said. That was last summer. Train-a-mania. I don't know how we kept the branches open. People were in so much training. And a lot of it was task-related, but just as much of it was really about how we do our jobs. So the guides. We had a Guides Unite meeting. And what we looked at was people's passions and how we really connected with our customers, because that's the importance of what guides do. For the Concierge Unite, it was all about that hospitality attitude and having an incredible sense of playfulness all the time that included the customers.
We were moving from a traditional skills-based focus to a competency-based focus. It wasn't about how well you knew the ILS system or how quickly you could check something out. It was about how you accomplished this. Were you friendly? Were you a good team player? Did you have a positive attitude? The jobs weren't just about checkout, shelving, story timing anymore. They were about the interactions with our team and the interactions with our customers. Our competencies were designed to emphasize the characteristics that we felt made up a successful organization. They are I statements. I am an innovator. I am a problem solver. I am customer focused. It gives you an idea of what is important to us. We used our competencies for recruiting. We've also this last year changed our review cycle. So now our performance is linked to these competencies. We've set the bar high for ourselves, and we set this expectation. And now we're trying to live up to this expectation, and that's making us a better organization.
Something that's happened as a result of all the innovations that's happening and our job descriptions is a couple of years ago, I don't think we received hardly any people applying for jobs. It's not that we have lots of job vacancies at this moment, but when we do, we're flooded from people all around the country. We recently had an AnyThink manager posted. I think it was December. We had 50 people apply. We shortlisted to 10, and we did telephone interviews. And people from all over the country said, I'm working in a library district that's pretty staid and bureaucratic and full of rules, and I'd love to work at a library like you. So I think that we're ripe in the profession for people to start thinking about things in a different way. Long before we worked on our competencies for our staff, we developed our design standards for our buildings. Our library board gave us some key words to start with. Bookstore. Fireplaces. All of our libraries have to have fireplaces. Even our little remodels, we're squeezing fireplaces into. And one of the most important, LEED Silver. That was one of the standards of sustainability that we were working toward. In any typical building project, generally what happens is you have a building program, which tells you the linear number of feet that you're going to have for shelving, your tables, your chairs, your space requirements for how many staff, your entryway. When I arrived at Rangeview, we had a building program, and I stared at it, and I said, I don't know how I'm going to fit people into these buildings because they're just full of bookshelving. The only way I was able to do that is that we took all the shelving out on the plans. My project manager and architect had a heart attack. We scratched our head and we said, what do people need in libraries? People need spaces for quiet. They need spaces for collaboration. They need spaces to be noisy. They need spaces to think. And this is intergenerational. Whether you're a child, a teen, or an adult or senior, all of these spaces are incredibly important. And so that became our guidelines. And we designed zones for all of those activities, and then we put bookshelving around it. And it worked. People feel welcome and comfortable in our libraries. We have that Colorado outdoor, indoor feel. They're light, they're airy, they're majestic. One of the things that you probably understand by now is that we believe in fun and play. Not only do staff have a criteria that we have to have a playful, fun, whimsical attitude, because if you spend so much time at work, you might as well have fun, right? But we also think that our customers should have those same playful, whimsical, comfortable, welcoming experiences. One of our favorite signature items that we've had in our spaces are tree houses. This is our most recent new library, which has treehouse sculptures where kids can discover the night sky, and we're working on frog pond and mountain waterfall. So as you go through this little maze to get into the children's department, you have this discovery experience and that sense of imagination that you might have had when you were a kid sitting in a treehouse reading a book. LEED requires a significant commitment, both financially and philosophically, and we're building our spaces and our culture to be as sustainable and green as possible. We've integrated solar, geothermal heating and cooling systems, solar tube lighting, beetle kill pine, which is a local Colorado wood, recycled materials, and a commitment to purchasing materials and subcontractors within a 100-mile radius. This collaborative effort has resulted in our Anything Brighton library was the first carbon-neutral library in the country.
Yay.
And two of our four new libraries actually has exceeded our silver standard, and they're going to come in at LEED Gold.
Even though it would be 6 months before we launched our new brand, by the spring of 2009, the staff was already living the brand. I mean, we had already selected it. We already were beginning to sort of develop it and plan for the big launch. But the one thing that we needed to do right away that was part of our launch strategy was to come up with a unique voice for the brand that we could begin using and sort of like slipping into things before we actually did the big reveal. So we created a voice, a unique voice for Anything, and it began to appear in all of our, everything that we wrote. You saw the manifesto, and that was sort of written with the language and with the unique voice that we were beginning to use, both internally and externally, on everything, all of our marketing collateral, all of our media, press releases, our newsletters, everything. So that by the time the brand was revealed, it would all make sense to people because they would already have been hearing it from us in a consistent way. Our new symbol, when we first saw it in the lineup, or the symbol and the logo, when we first saw it in the lineup from Ricochet Ideas, they brought us into the studio and they had a whole bunch of logos lined up, we were shocked and we kind of like pointed at it and laughed at it like, what the heck is that? But we kept coming back to it over and over during that meeting. And it sort of crept into our brains and we thought, yeah, there's something about that that we like a lot. When you look at it, I mean, it's just a made up word and a scribble. And what did it really mean? I mean, it like I said, it crept into our brains. It sort of looks like a brain, I think. It looks like a pile of spaghetti. It looks like a crazy road map. It looks like the most sort of complex paperclip ever manufactured. But that's the thing about it. And that's what we talked about the next day when we were like, do you still like that? I think I still like it. What does it mean to you? Well, to me it means order out of chaos, or, you know, I mean, everybody had their own version of it. And that's what we liked about it. We liked that everybody could kind of relate to it, and the fact that it was a made-up word and just a scribble with no preconceived meaning that we were trying to foist on people made it work for us. It was the kind of symbol that we were looking for, I think, that really did represent the sort of organic, ever-evolving library that we were to become and that we were already becoming. And it also gave birth to Dude the Squirrel, D-O-O-D. There he is. Dude is our mischievous mascot of curiosity, we like to call him. And he was the product of our new, one of the products of our new brand.
So we're now getting to the fun part, right? You've been patient, and we're ready to unveil kind of where we went. So our job was to take all this thinking that we were doing, and we were now in the position that all of you are in the audience. We were going, okay, now what? How do we take all this ideas and thinking? Staff's ready to go. Everybody's bursting at the seams. They were sort of stealing these logo stickers and putting them on their notebooks and things, even though that was strictly forbidden. So people were, like, excited. And, you know, we'd come back to another meeting, and next thing you know, somebody had, like, these lapel pins, and we're like, where did that come from? We were not supposed to be launching the brand for 2 weeks, and these things are leaking out. But it was fantastic because that excitement was just catching up. So it was our job to suddenly say, okay, now let's let this thing spring into bloom, right? We're going to blow it open. And we didn't have an advertising budget. So we had to look internally and say, okay, where are our brand touch points, right? They live in the smallest of places. They live in our name tags, right? They live on our front doors. They live on bookmarks. So that's what we started doing. We said, let's look outside at the parking lot. First place was a set of parking lot banners. With this idea of any became this campaign thought and answering with anything the logo. So, for example, when we were talking about cooking, it's any braise, any roast, any sear, any way you can imagine, any think. So we did lots and lots and lots of these. We did front door signage because we wanted the places to be exciting and bright. We did bookmobile wraps. And we even decided that we would do mini bookmobiles for the kids at the grand openings, which were a huge success. They could fold out and cut those. And I think the line on this talked about any adventure, any hero, any science fair project. So, again, it was like all these things you can do to beyond just the world of books, beyond the world of standard, what you expect from a library, and sort of this encouragement. With that said, I'd like to read a bit of copy again that supports the difference, like we were talking about, the difference between information and persuasion. I'm going to pick a couple examples of a poster campaign that we did, and these were also turned into bookmarks that we handed out. So when we're talking about sports, which is a huge category, right, we wanted to find not just, hey, we have books about sports, come check out our books about sports, but we wanted to motivate people and let them know that we are as passionate about some of these topics. You're going to find a guide that loves this. We were always equating it to, they're not around anymore, actually, but remember when we were all so young? You would go into the record store and, like, forbid if you asked the guy behind the record store anything about music, right? Because he's like, let me tell you about the band that was that band before that band was that before that band, right? But that passion is something that our guides have, and we wanted to encourage this interaction. So we'll see if this copy does the trick. But for sports, it says, the victory is all we remember. But ask anyone in an Anythink name tag, and they'll help you look behind the glory with movies, books, magazines, and news clips that tell the untold story of what it takes to be a champion. So am I getting there with that? Is that like, wow, I want to talk to that guide about that? Well, so that's sports. Let's look at horror, right? I like horror. So we have a chainsaw graphic up there. And I'm sorry, Steve, how long did it take for the horror t-shirts? You had a contest, and they were gone in, like, what, 1 hour?
It was about an hour.
So, yeah, Steve ran a little trivia contest because we came up with a chainsaw t-shirt right around the holiday season, and the staff went crazy. I mean, when else do you get to wear a chainsaw and talk about horror to your customers, right? But the idea here, any captor, any victim, any chance. We're trying to build anticipation and that love for horror stories, right? So the copy says, looking for horror? It's here. We can help you get to the most gruesome stories, movies, and graphic novels. Just look over your shoulder for anybody wearing an anything name tag and ask. So again, that's supporting that concept. Like, just ask. That's what we want to help. And we're trying to say it without saying, like, please ask us. We want to help. But just encourage it. And then the last one I'll show you, I think, is about history. And so we wanted something that really, you know, history buffs want to know why. What are the answers, right? So there's this hand grenade. And I should mention, too, I failed to mention the illustrations. We went with these sort of breakout illustrations because we wanted to demonstrate that a guide will go with you wherever and how far you want to go. That's their job, right? We talked about trespassing into the known and returning with something. So it's like if somebody wants to know, we're going to help you find that out. Wherever, however, we're going to keep digging until we get that spark lit for you or carry on that fuel. So for history, we said searching for facts, truth, reasons. Anyone wearing an anything name tag can help you unravel any conflict in recorded history, from photos, newsreels, and maps, to documentaries, biographies, and archive news. Just ask. So again, we're trying to push beyond like, oh, I want to go in and get a book about history. I like World War II. But there's so many resources that we need to encourage the customers to engage us in that we can help turn them on to social media sites that are about that or different collections. So we really wanted in all the communications to sort of broaden our messaging that way. So, that is a lot about what we think, and you guys have been really patient so far. I'd like to roll a video right now and take all of you to one of our grand openings so that you can see what people think.
People might be surprised to hear a library director quoting Keith Richards with the Rolling Stones. Growing up, he says, there are two institutions that are the most powerful. One is the church, one is the library. The church belongs to God, the library belongs to you. The library is actually the great equalizer. I think that that's emblematic of what Anythink is all about. It belongs to you. Anythink is much, much more than the traditional library where you just check out a book or a video or a DVD. Anythink is a place where you actually interact with the information and you make something special. You might read a cookbook and you have this gourmet meal with your family. You might read a poem and then you might fall in love. Anythink is a place that can actually change your life.
Why do you think they called it that?
Anything?
I think it's just a good name for anything you can think of.
Anything. It just, what is what it says? You can think outside the box.
We love talking about this sort of ongoing revolution that where we're turning everything upside down or at least sideways.
Imagination can run wild.
Anything's possible. There's no limit to the possibilities. You have to put your mind to it.
Anything you can think of.
There's anything here that you need.
I think it's a great name.
Cover.
That's very good.
And shaking it up a little bit where it needs to be to create something new.
I like departing from what a library was.
With anything, it's anything the library can offer.
And it's the only name it could be.
Let's try it out and see what we think about anything.
We're not the stereotypical library.
It's clean, it's big, it's got a great kids area.
I think it's awesome.
We got all the DVDs in the cases already. It makes it a lot easier.
She's checking out some of the music CDs.
My team's been the conversion team to help get rid of all those Dewey Decimal System numbers and to put our WordThink brand on every single book.
They've got like mystery cooking. It's just
they have
gorgeous.
It all in little sections.
I like the architecture. I like how it's laid out. I like all the activities that are available.
It's great. It's beautiful. It's clean. It's fresh. It's fun.
Oh, I like it. You know, it's spacious, open, light, nice setup.
Looks pretty good. The computers, the televisions, the stuff at the East End down there with the Guitar Hero and all of that. I thought that was pretty cool.
The people who walk through our doors are patrons, and their needs are to be served. In order to do that, it's important that the staff that's working on the floor be out and about.
Perhaps somebody's carrying it around with them, or it's on a return cart or something.
Sure.
We can put it on hold, and then we'll get it as soon as it comes back.
Good customer service that you would find anywhere, library, retail store, wherever. It's that same quality of wanting to help you.
You just scan the library card, and then you scan the books, and you push checkout, and people are good to go. Go done. You're all good.
Thank you.
What's interesting about Anythink is that this is the first time I've been invited to talk about technology in a library.
I hope that other libraries look to us to see what's possible.
I felt energized when I walked in here.
More than I expected it would be.
We've got a children's room, and for the little kids, it just lets them play around and just do their own thing.
I like the break dancing class. They did like flips in the air, and they were really cool.
Oh, wow. There's something exciting going on at this place.
We just moved here, so we're excited that this is here to experience.
What an exciting time to move to Brighton.
I think it's going to blow people away when they come in here.
I think it's pretty bomb.
Amazing. I think it's great.
It's cool. Awesome.
I love that we have comfortable seating and that we encourage people to come in and hang out.
This seems like a nice place to be able to come to and sit and read.
The best things I saw today was the fireplace back there.
We look forward to the cold days. We can come out and read right in front of the fireplace.
It's really nice to have spaces to sit.
It'd be a good, nice place to get comfortable and enjoy books.
No expectation that you even have to check out a book. You can just come here and hang out, enjoy the beautiful environment.
I mean, it's so different from what we've been used to. I mean, we were crammed in such a little facility.
This is a fantastic improvement in the fact that it's larger, more variety.
I'm just amazed by the amount of books that the library has now. It's a great thing.
I mean, that other one was so small, and all the variety here, they have different sections now for the kids.
We've been anxiously awaiting, counting down to the opening of this.
When I became mayor, one of my goals was to try to revitalize the downtown area.
The library being downtown will be a huge benefit to Brighton.
Our plan is that this will serve as a hub to the community.
Yeah, it really makes a difference in this area.
To see that cultural part, yeah, it's great.
This library will be where people meet, where people do things.
And I saw some rooms over there, so some people can get together and have some little conference and meeting each other, or we can start some club.
The rec center is already such an asset to the community, and now this is another gem.
Brighton is so fortunate to have this new facility.
This is a great first step in towards, you know, making the downtown, you know, giving it a fresh look.
And it's here now. It's beautiful. And I don't think we could ask for anything better.
Anythink was an opportunity to expand and create a real brand that meant something to people, and the chance to stand out and be different in a library space when there's so much of the obvious was fantastic for us. So I think people have grabbed on Anythink and they're really celebrating it. A lot of people ask us about our new logo and about the doodle and what that stands for.
The beginning of all ideas.
Order from chaos?
Reminds me of spaghetti, but it's mind food.
The doodle can be anything you want it to be.
And the quest for information isn't always a straight line. Sometimes it wends around and you learn other things in the process.
The possibilities are endless.
Something that really resonates with people. They see it and they get it and they've done it and they can relate to it.
So I want to just, one last customer touch point you saw in the video was the T-shirts that I'm wearing and the staff are wearing. And this was something that was an interesting revolution, because we started off being very conscious about, you know, are we going to ask people to wear a... Yeah. Are we going to ask people to wear a uniform? And is, does that fit with our whole theme? And we also want, you know, librarians come in all shapes and sizes. We wanted to make sure that people felt, you know, some people want to feel very professional in a library. And we didn't want to squash people's individuality. And so the conclusion was to, you know, and part of being green too is let's get away from dry cleaning and let's offer some of the staff some T-shirts. And maybe we can put some messaging on those shirts that help encourage people to stop and chat. You know, here you guys go by pushing a cart with a 10 tons of books at a million miles an hour. So I think it's important to say, I'm not busy. I'm not busy. I just walk fast. And then somebody else talked about the conventions of shh. So I love the idea that shh is a four-letter word. I think that really sort of summarizes how we feel. So with that said, if anybody's interested and likes these shirts, we have them for sale. No, we have... I have some right here, and I have a good right arm. Who would like one? Okay. We make no promises about sizes or messaging. You'll have to trade. I have to give one to somebody in the front row, right?
How are we doing on time?
Am I ready?
Yeah.
All right. Settle down, you lot. Actually, I'm going to unsettle you. Or you're going to unsettle. So it is your turn to disrupt a convention. A library convention. Look into your bags. Pull out your kazoos. When we did the brand rollout, one of the most exciting, enjoyable activities was the kazoo hullabaloo. And now it's your opportunity to do what we call kazooioki. Think Yellow Submarine, two verses and the chorus. Are you ready? Thinkers. Okay, now to finish up, our director Pam Sandlin Smith is going to do what she does so well. She's going to help bring some semblance of order out of chaos.
So we are right at time, and so my page of notes is going to go down the tubes, but I do want to have a few closing words. One, you can see what Anythink has meant to us. It's really given the entire district, but more importantly, our entire community, a new lease on life. It's given us hope. I'd like to have all of the Anythinkers from Range U stand up, including our board members, Ray and Dot, who are here. Project manager, Justin Sager is at the back. He has, if you have any questions about the buildings or LEED, Justin, raise your hand. None of this would have happened without the entire collaborative team and hard work of not enough people. Jim Collins says, greatness is not a function of circumstance. Greatness is largely a matter of conscious choice and discipline. We had a little extra money, but it really wasn't the money that made the difference in our turnaround, our revolution. It was really largely taking a look at our conventions, and looking at libraries in a creative way, and everyone coming to work every day with full of passion, vigor, and the commitment that we're going to design, build, and deliver the best libraries we could for our community. And what's happening? The people who walk through our doors are floored. One couple just recently were on their way to a movie, hadn't been to the library in years. They stopped into our new Huron Anything. They didn't go to the movie. They said, "This library has everything we need." We have a child care director who says, "Thank you so much for not dumbing down the libraries the way governments often do. Your space here is so fabulous. Now our families have a place to bring their kids. I'm going to tell all my teachers about it. It's developmentally appropriate. Thank you so much." My final story is a young man who's in high school who actually spoke at our Brighton grand opening, Roberto. Roberto was failing in school and was going to an alternate school. Roberto actually started coming to the library every afternoon, and it was the relationship with that teen librarian, Chris, who you saw in the video, the Mind Spaghetti guy. Chris developed a relationship with Roberto, helped him out with his homework, coaxed him, and just a couple of months later, Roberto pulled up his grades and he got back in the regular high school. Roberto claims his success is largely due to coming to the library after every afternoon and his relationship with that librarian, Chris. And that's what it's all about. It's creating that relationship because we make a difference in the lives of our people every day. And I know that everybody in here does it every day because we're librarians. As you all go home next week, I want you to think carefully about what you're going to need to do to create your own revolution. Thank you so much for being here today. And as you're walking out the door, I want to tell you one thing. It doesn't stop. This is just the beginning. If you have ideas, conventions, disruptions, conversations, if you go to our website, anythinklibraries.org, we have something called Anythink Tank, that we welcome your ideas, and we hope to continue this conversation with all of you and our colleagues. Thanks very much for being here.